This week on our States of the Union series, we're looking at Texas, a state that has produced four presidents from across the political spectrum. Joining me now to explain what will get voters in the Lone Star State to the polls this election cycle is Ross Ramsey, the editor of Texas Weekly, a newsletter on government and politics in Texas. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to our States of the Union series. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Texas has the second highest number of electoral votes with 34. Does that make it an important state for the candidates in a campaign with such wide open fields in both parties?
Well, it should, but our primaries are late and we remain pretty red. So in the primary elections, because of our timing, it's possible that both the Democratic and Republican candidates will have been chosen by the time they get here.
And why didn't Texas decide to follow number one California and move its primary date to February 5th?
Well, you pick a pointed finger. You know, they actually made an attempt during the legislative session, and, you know, in short form, the Republicans blame the Democrats. The Democrats blame the Republicans. A number of them blame the statewide officials who, for various personal reasons, didn't want to move the primaries around.
Well, since the state is so totally controlled by Republicans, how can they blame the Democrats?
Well, the Democrats had sufficient votes in the legislature to mess things up, and this bill just didn't move. It got to the point where, you know, it should have, you know, all reasons of physics, it should have been moving, and it wasn't moving, so you have to go to politics at that point.
Go ahead.
And, you know, I mean, at that point, it's not even party politics. It was more, you know, what does this guy think? What does she think? What do they think? And, you know, it was personalities more than politics. But in any case, it got stalled and didn't go anywhere. So our primary will be March 4th.
Were you surprised when Governor Rick Perry endorsed Rudy Giuliani?
I was a little, but not completely. Giuliani's had a statewide presence of sorts since he became a named partner in the Bracewell and Giuliani law firm, which is Houston-based. And, you know, for Perry, it makes a great deal of sense. I mean, it puts him on a national stage. He's a fresh face in 49 states. He's a Texan who's not George Bush. He can speak, as Giuliani can't sometimes, to mega churches and far-right crowds, and can address parts of the audience that Giuliani doesn't touch. So the marriage makes some sense in that way. In terms of Texas politics, you know, there are always missteps you can make. If you choose the wrong candidate, for instance, a few years ago, Texas Democrats who were siding with Michael Dukakis had to live with that for the next two or three election cycles. He wasn't a popular guy down here.
Well, Giuliani has done a lot to connect to Texas. He also hired Olson and Shuvalov, the direct mail and consulting firm that was started by Karl Rove.
Right, and which was involved right in the middle of Rick Perry's first Agriculture Commission race. So there are a lot of those kinds of ties. The other thing here is that there's some overlap between their fundraising networks. You know, Texas doesn't matter in some ways in the primary in terms of votes, but it matters a great deal in terms of money. And, you know, where Hillary Clinton is the leading fundraiser so far nationally, Rudy Giuliani is the leading fundraiser in Texas. So it's a financial base.
Is Rick Perry as popular governor as George W. Bush was?
No, not as popular, but not, you know, in some ways as unpopular as Bush has become. Perry had a hard election last time in that he had a Democratic opponent, as expected. He had a renegade Republican who ran as an independent, Carol Strayhorn, and he had Kinky Friedman, who was sort of an unexplainable independent candidate. So Perry got out of the election with 39%, and his detractors like to point out that he's the 39% governor. In a field of four where everybody had some money or some name ID or some reason for voters to turn their heads, 39 was probably a pretty good number.
Some people have said that Kinky Friedman was the spoiler. Can the Democrats win an election of that sort now that the Republican Party has changed, has redistricted the state so drastically?
Well, yes and no. The statewide Republicans underperform, or rather overperform, legislative Republicans. What I mean by that is if you're an average statewide Republican, you'll get 12 points, you'll do better by 12 percentage points than I will as a Republican legislative candidate. So clearly there's something there. That probably means there's a Democratic opportunity in terms of, you know, if they had better statewide candidates, they might get better numbers. Kinky was a spoiler in the same way that Carol was, where they gave everybody, I used to call it the middle finger vote, but they gave everybody the opportunity to say, I don't want the Democrats or the Republicans, I'm just going to walk on this one.
What are the most important constituencies in Texas?
The ones, you know, everybody likes to talk about the new constituency of the moment. Sort of the base constituencies that are important are Hispanics, who vote overwhelmingly Democratic. Blacks, it's a small group in Texas, about 10%, but they vote overwhelmingly Democratic. For Republicans, there are seven suburban counties, primarily around Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio, and those are critical to Republican votes. Those are sort of where you get your base votes. And then there's been this fight for 20 years, since the Reagan years, over what used to be called the Reagan Democrats. In Texas, they're conservative Democrats. They have, for the last 10 or 15 years, voted pretty consistently with the Republicans. But as we see in some of our legislative and local races, it's possible for Democrats to win those votes. So that's, you know, to the extent that there's a swing vote, that's where it is.
Has there been any backlash against the Republicans, as there has been in the rest of the country, because of the war?
There's been quite a bit, but we started out so red that it brings us, you know, only into the redder stages of purple in most of these races. I think it's probably still a you can't throw it away if you're a Republican, but it's not a state where they're going to have to spend a lot of money campaigning.
Now, how has the state become such a red state? It was, after all, it's a state that gave us Lyndon Johnson. It gave us a whole bunch of major political figures through the Democratic Party. Is it because of changes in the state? Are farmers still a big constituency? Or is it because the tech industry has grown so much in Texas?
It's more the changes. I mean, our suburban voters, which are, you know, pretty strongly Republican in most parts of the state, have grown dramatically over the last few years. The rural vote, as I said, you know, Ronald Reagan turned their heads in 1980, and for a large number of those folks, their heads have remained turned. You know, Bush the first was on that first ticket in 1980, and there's been a Bush on the presidential ticket since. And, you know, I guess with one exception. And
he was on the dole.
Right. So they've kind of stayed over there. Now, as I said, in the legislative and local races, when you look at, you know, we look at county sheriff races to see how local politics are going and things like that, Democrats can win at that stage. So a lot of it is that the Democrats haven't engaged their old constituencies, which are relatively conservative, in the way that they used to in the 80s. And I think that's, if the Democrats come back in Texas, that's where they'll come back.
I'm talking with Ross Sweeney, the editor of Texas Weekly, a newsletter on government and politics in Texas as part of our States of the Union series. I mentioned the big tech industry aspects of the state. We have Texas Instruments, Dell, defense contractors like Halliburton and NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. Has that helped Republicans in Texas?
To some extent, it's easy to overstate. Texas has always been a big defense state, and those companies and the political action committees associated with them and the workers associated with them have kind of voted their paychecks. So when Jim Wright, the Democrat from Fort Worth, was the Speaker of the House and was, you know, helping them win contracts for the B-2 bomber, you know, all of those high tech and aerospace people were Democrats. You know, when it turns to Republicans, you know, they sort of vote their meal ticket. So as far as the new tech is concerned, the Dell types and those, their money has been more Republican. Their votes have been, you know, in the scheme of things, a large drop, but still a drop in the bucket. And they've mainly been a source of money and financing for Republican candidates.
There have also been scandals connected to some of those companies, Enron, Halliburton.
Sure.
There's also Tom DeLay's scandal.
Right.
Have they had any impact at all?
They've had quite a bit. In fact, I was talking a few years ago to a Democrat who's a prominent fundraiser here who was bemoaning the fall of Tom DeLay. He said, what are we going to put in our fundraising letters now? somebody always comes around for you, I guess. But DeLay was he compared DeLay to the Democrats what Edward Kennedy is to the Republicans, I guess. So the DeLay thing has shaken people, and in fact, there's a relatively local issue here involving the House Speaker in the Texas State House, and he's sort of become a mini version of the effigy of Tom DeLay. His name is Tom Craddock, and in some of our races, you'll hear people talking about Tom Craddock and the way he's running the House and the way he's made it harshly Republican, and I expect some backlash on the legislative level to those Whether that bleeds into statewide races, I'm skeptical at this point.
Now, you mentioned that Rudy Giuliani is leading in the fundraising in Texas, but are you surprised that Hillary Clinton is second?
I'm a little surprised, if only because John Edwards' national fundraiser is from Dallas. His name is Fred Barron. And, in fact, Edwards is running third here in fundraising. Giuliani, Clinton, Edwards, and Romney here in Texas. I guess nationally it's Clinton, Obama, Romney, and Giuliani. The Clinton fundraising machine in Texas has been really, really strong and effective, I guess, like it has everywhere else. And it's hard to find – that's probably not fair. It's harder with her to find people who are sort of devout Hillary people so much as it is to find people who say, well, you know, this is the best candidate, this is the strongest candidate, this is where we need to be. It's not a real passionate vote, it doesn't seem like.
The electability thing.
Right. But the money people are really kind of lined up behind her. They think that's the horse to bet on.
What are the top three issues that will get out the vote in Texas?
Well, it's odd, and we've got a different take on it, but immigration is certainly in there. And the immigration debate in Texas, as you can tell from what happens to people from border states when they go national, like George Bush or John McCain, it's a different kind of an argument down here. Part of it is... For the most part, when you talk about immigration reform in a place like Texas, you're talking about border security more than you're talking about illegal immigration, although illegal immigration is certainly a part of it. That'll certainly be a driver for the Republicans and in Republican primaries. We'll have some aspect of the change vote that, you know, that we see nationally. There's some element of people that, you know, want to go out and change things. There's an anti-war vote. I think that's going to be significant. And then
it's interesting that Ron Paul, who is a presidential candidate out of Texas,
right,
is the only Republican who is against the war.
It is. And, you know, that's less a reflection of Texas Republicans than it is of Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
He's a classic, iconoclastic contrarian. I mean, he kind of goes his own way and says his own thing. And, you know, he's been very effective nationwide, and he's very popular in his home district. You know, he'll easily win, I think, his congressional seat, you know, regardless of what happens in the presidential race. And then the last thing that really drives elections, and frankly, I don't know that this is as strong elsewhere as it is in Texas, is we get a giant swing in voter turnout in presidential years. We go from 34% of the electorate to 57% of the electorate. So what you see in a 2006 election can be quite different from what you see in a presidential election. And the tendency in the last several years has been for presidential elections in the general election to be a more Republican electorate than we get in a regular general election.
Is gun control likely to be a big issue?
Gun control in Texas is politically it's kind of a no-brainer. It's you got to be for guns. You're a Second Amendment guy or you won't get elected. It was one of the things that helped George Bush beat Ann Richards back in 1994. And the state, the most recent polls I've seen still show the state in favor of the gun owners, if you want to put it that way, somewhere in the 60 to 65% range.
Last week, Rick Perry floated a proposal for a virtual border patrolled by 200 cameras, suggested that it could be patrolled on the internet, and Rudy Giuliani has put that into his campaign. What are Texans, how are they responding to that?
Well, it's actually an idea that he floated at the beginning of the year here in Texas, and it's getting its national debut, I guess, with the Giuliani campaign. It sort of got poo-pooed. The legislature was here when he first proposed it, and, you know, his detractors said, you know, he was basically trying to turn the border problem into a video game, and it sort of died in the legislature. Now, there were some other issues that got in its way, and it's possible it didn't get a really fair hearing, but most of the proposals for the border that we've seen here involve some version of physical walls, virtual walls, what they call boots on the ground, increases in the border patrol, and in some cases funneling federal money to local law enforcement authorities, sheriffs and those sorts of folks. So if taken as part of the tapestry, it's not a real new idea here in Texas. I guess it's a new idea nationally.
But Texas has cultivated a closer relationship with Mexico than almost any other state. So are immigration attitudes, do they break down along party lines or do they break down along other lines?
They break down, you know, it's a cultural and economic thing. And most of the noise or the pushback on illegal immigration in the last 5 years or so has come from places where they're not, where they're getting immigrant populations and didn't previously have them. So in Northeast Texas, for example, there are large numbers of chicken farms. Bo Pilgrim works down in that area, and I guess those are regional firms, but they've had an influx of Hispanics and an influx in particular of Mexican nationals, and so the issue plays differently than it does in my hometown of El Paso, you know, where the Mexican and Texan economies are completely interwoven.
Well, you just cross the border and go into Juarez, and it's pretty much the same city.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it's, you know, it's a, it, and basically both of those cities would wither without the other. And, you know, it's completely integrated. The same's true in Laredo. The same's true in McAllen. And so we have a different relationship to the border. And that economic relationship comes all the way up into Dallas and Houston and San Antonio in ways that it might not in other parts of the country. So, you know, when you look at it from a Texas standpoint, it has less to do with party, more to do with economics and local culture and how, you know, how far and how long you've been playing this thing.
Now, I hate to ask these questions, but make any predictions? Or do you think that everything will change when the primaries in the other states have pretty much decided how things are going to go?
Well, I think most of the political watchers here are kind of resigned to the fact that we don't get to play. On the other hand, we all sort of nurture the hope that we'll get that the game will go late, and on March 4th, Texas will decide the whole thing for the whole country. So that's our fantasy. But right now, if Texas were in the super-duper Tuesday in early February, the state would probably go with Clinton on the Democratic side and probably would go with Giuliani on the Republican side. Now, the proviso on that is, if I'd been talking to you 4 years ago, I would have said, well, Howard Dean will win the Democratic primary.
And none of the scandals that have been associated with Rudy Giuliani have had much of an impact in Texas?
No, I think most people don't know about them. I think that's going to be, you know, this is always the danger when you're running for president, is what's known at home is news in 49 other states. And I think for a lot of these candidates, there are, you know, for instance, most of what we've learned about George W. Bush and his campaigns wasn't really news here, but it was big news in 49 states. I think Rudy Giuliani's going to have that same bumpy ride.
Russ Ramsey, editor of Texas Weekly, thank you so much for participating in our States of the Union series.
Thanks so much for calling.